Crazy Horse lived and enacted by four very, very simple principles. First, know yourself, meaning know your skills, your limitations, what you can and can't do, and how you've performed in certain situations, and really to be honest with yourself about who and what you are and what your skills are. Secondly, know your friends. And Crazy Horse didn't have a lot of friends. He had a core of maybe three or four very close friends, but he knew them intimately. But he also had a lot of people who naturally followed him, as I alluded to earlier. There were always a core of anywhere from 50 to 200 men that would in a heartbeat follow Crazy Horse because of who and what he was. And he tried to get to know them as much as possible. He got to know them as individuals because he was related to some of them, and he tried to look at them as human beings with skills and limitations so that he would use them in a given situation. If a man couldn't perform a particular task, he didn't ask him to do that. But he played to their strength and he was aware of their weaknesses. So that was the second philosophy. Know your friends. The third one is just as important, maybe even more so. Know the enemy. When Crazy Horse was born, white people were already in the northern plains. But as he grew up, he learned about our enemies at the time, the Crow to the north and the Shoshones to the west, the Pawnee to the south, sometimes the Arikara to the north. He was taught about those enemies as a boy growing up. And really, those people had a lot in common in terms of lifestyle, cultural philosophy, and so forth. So he grew up knowing those enemies very, very intimately, as much as he could. He took that philosophy and he tried to apply it to the Euro-Americans or the whites. He tried to learn about them as much as possible and know who and what they were and what was causing them to do and say the things that they were. Two incidents had an impact on Crazy Horse's attitude about the Euro-Americans. And because of those two incidents, he considered them a threat to his lifestyle, to the lifestyle of his people. I don't know if he really considered them an honorable enemy, because enemy had a certain connotation in a lot of plains tribal cultures, because enemy was an honorable thing to be. But many Lakota, many of the native tribes, didn't really consider Euro-Americans as honorable enemies, maybe not even enemies so much as a nuisance. In 1854, Crazy Horse was, as a boy, as light hair, maybe he was about 14 or 15 years old, was in the area of Fort Laramie in southeastern Wyoming when the famous Mormon cow incident occurred, wherein a Mormon lost his cow. It wandered into a Sichangu Lakota camp, and someone killed the cow, butchered it, and distributed it among the elderly. It was at a time when those people who were living near the forts were being given government annuities, food, and so forth, and they were waiting for those annuities, mainly in a form of cattle, to be brought to them so they could have food to eat. And so this cow wanders in, and it's butchered and it's distributed. And a misunderstanding occurs because of this, and a contingent of soldiers are sent, led by Lieutenant Grattan, and so the incident is known as the Grattan Massacre. 30 soldiers, including Grattan, opened fire on a village, killed some people, killed the leader, and of course there was retaliation and all of the soldiers were killed. Crazy Horse witnessed that as a boy. And that gave him a sense, or raised some doubts at least, about the white people. Who were they? What did they really want? Why did this happen? He had to have wondered. A year later, an incident occurred that was a retaliation of the Grattan incident. General William Harney, led a very large column, probably 1,000 or more soldiers. He came through Nebraska and came to Blue Water Creek in northwestern Nebraska, where there was a sizable encampment of Sichangu Lakota, led by Little Thunder and Spotted Tail and Iron Shell. And Harney sent emissaries and invited the Lakota leaders to visit with him, and he told them that he wanted the people who had killed Grattan to be turned over to him so he could imprison them and punish them for what they did. And of course, the Lakota weren't about to do that, because it was not as simple as somebody killing Grattan. It was an affair that was provoked by the army itself, but Harney didn't care. To make a long story short, Crazy Horse was also part of Little Thunder's camp. He was there visiting his relatives. Horny attacked, and there was a desperate fight, and the leaders fought well, but there were too many soldiers, and over 100 women and children were captured and taken away. At the time of this incident, there were a lot of men who were away hunting, and Crazy Horse, as a boy, was among those hunters. And toward evening, he came back to Little Thunder's camp, and in the distance, he saw smoke. And when he rode in to investigate what had happened, he found the camp destroyed, teepees burned, household goods scattered all around, and worse than that, he found bodies. He found bodies of men, women, and children, mostly women and children. And he found mutilated bodies of women and children. So those two incidents, the Grattan incident and the retaliation on Little Thunder, formed in Crazy Horse's mind the impression that would last the rest of his life. At the very least, he would never trust whites. At the very most, he probably hated them with a passion. And because of that, because of what they did, he made it his business to know as much about them as possible, and he really didn't end up knowing all that he could. But along about 1864, 1865, and 1866, he began to realize something about his enemy, that they were more interested in killing and destroying as much as possible than they were about demonstrating bravery. In other words, their concept of warfare and their application of warfare was much different than the Lakota traditional concept. A lot of white historians like to say that Crazy Horse wanted to emulate the tactics of the soldiers because they had superior tactics. That was not the truth by any stretch of the imagination. What Crazy Horse did realize was that the only way to defeat the soldiers was to kill them all, because that's what they understood. They understood killing. So he talked to other leaders and said, this is what we have to do. Because the soldiers only understand killing, we have to be the same way in dealing with them. We have to kill them all. So it had nothing to do with tactics. It had to do with attitude. So in that sense, he got to know the white enemy fairly well. The last, or the fourth philosophy of Crazy Horse is very, very simple, very, very eloquent, and very, very effective. As I said earlier, he issued only one order, and that order was follow me. That philosophy was to go first, take the lead. Jump on your horse first and be the first to ride out to meet the enemy, no matter what you think the consequences of that might be. And that's what he did. Crazy Horse became, like Sitting Bull, both a civilian and a military leader, but he did it at a very young age. In his early 20s, he was made what we call a shirt wearer. It was more of a symbolic office. Young men were selected for their qualities as individuals and as leaders, and they were given a shirt to wear. And as a shirt wearer, you had to live your life as an example for others. You had to live your life beyond reproach. It was a daunting responsibility. But the shirt that was given to each one was a depiction of their accomplishments up to that point in their life. Remember, Crazy Horse was only about 21 or 22 when he was given this responsibility and a shirt that went with it. By that time, by that age, there were over 100 locks of hair. They weren't scalps, but there were locks of hair from his relatives that were tied into his shirt. And each lock of hair represented some kind of a significant deed done on behalf of the people, most of those deeds in combat. At the age of maybe 40 or so, Sitting Bull was able to acquire about 50 war honors. Crazy Horse, at the age of 25 or so, was able to, he won about 100 war honors. And most people in their lifetimes didn't earn that many honors, but Crazy Horse did at that point in his life. And it was because he took the lead. And the toughest thing he did really was not on the field of battle, but he still took the lead. He set the example. He surrendered in 1877. After the victory at the Little Bighorn, the Army and the federal government, the United States government, stepped up its campaign to put all the Lakota on the reservations. Sitting Bull fled to Canada, and Crazy Horse was the only quote-unquote wild Indian wild leader left, and his band of about, it was less than 1,000 people, were still resisting. And most of those 1,000 people were men, women, and children. He had only about 120 warriors available to him, and the buffalo were gone. Ammunition was always scarce, and the soldiers were attacking in the wintertime. So given all these factors, he saw the handwriting on the wall, and he saw, even though it probably turned his stomach, that the only course to follow was to surrender if he were to save everybody who was his responsibility. He certainly could have gone out, and the fighting men certainly could have gone out and died fighting. But the thought that was in their mind is, okay, if we're killed fighting, who's going to protect the helpless ones? And that was one of the things that he was expected to do as a man and as a leader, was to protect the helpless ones. So he had to forget about himself. He had to set aside what he wanted for himself. Maybe what he wanted was a glorious death on a battlefield. Nonetheless, he took the responsibility of saving everybody, and the only way he could do that was to surrender. And so he did. It was probably one of the most difficult, one of the most galling things he had to do in his life as a leader and as a man. But he did it. He had to take the lead. He had to set the example that there had to be a way to survive within the context of living under the control of white people. And if there was a way, he would find it. So he took his people from what is now north central Wyoming all the way to northwest Nebraska, a distance of almost 400 miles, to Fort Robinson. And of course, we all know what happened at Fort Robinson. There was some misunderstanding, to make a long story short, that resulted in his murder. But even in the most difficult times, Crazy Horse followed his philosophy. Know yourself, know your friends, know the enemy, and go first. It killed him in the end, but he still followed it. So when I think about leaders, when I think about the heroes in my life, I certainly think about my father, my grandfathers, my uncle, and a lot of other men. But one of the heroes that persists, even to this day, is Crazy Horse and what he did with his life and how he led. And that's the measure, that's the standard that I hold up when I look at people who profess to be leaders or who we put in leadership positions. And unfortunately, in my estimation, very few of them measure up. But the hope is that someday somebody will emerge that has those qualities that will show the way instead of pointing the way.